Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And we're joined today by special guest.
Me. Rob.
See, that time he did it on purpose.
No,
he gets
totally
this wrong a lot. That one was definitely on purpose.
I know, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
sorry, I was just... I was wavering. I said, shouldn't, no. Okay, all right.
He's
dramatic pause, and there.
But yes, we're joined because, of course, you are our mainstream pop culture correspondent. You are
Woo-hoo!
Here to tell us all about, you know, the things that, you know, mainstream America cares about, which we can honestly get pretty out of touch with sometimes. And of course, now
I don't know. I don't know how in touch I am with mainstream America at this point. I really don't know too much about America, even though I live in it. But
yeah,
anyway,
it's rough. It's really rough. All right, but first we got a bunch
can
of random crap to get through. first off, video games. I know
what
we're talking about
them.
Oh no, just that I've been talking recently about a couple of video games that were coming soon, and now people can buy both of them. So I just wanted to offer a quick update. So parkour themed. A game about escaping from a Mithras cult on a Mediterranean island, Die Young, is now out of open access, open alpha, and it is early access on Steam. So you can go to Steam today and buy yourself a copy of it. It's brutal, it's entertaining, the running around in the parkouring and climbing stuff is all very well done. They've just added a combat system, it's more playable than ever. So yeah, check out Die Young. Secondly, and DM can speak to this one, Canarium goes on sale today.
Yeah, definitely buy it.
Oh my god, it's so good. You're going to be blown away by what I just found out. Rob, you might have missed this. Over at the Hidden Object Guru channel, we did a playthrough of Canarium. First the demo, and then a bunch of the actual game.
The demo was a mistake.
Yeah, the demo was a mistake. I got a review copy, but they were not clear about how to play it. So I accidentally started playing
the
demo.
Is it an Angry Birds?
Oh, no.
Is
it an Angry Birds type?
Not at all.
Sorry. I like that is your one reference point to video games. You know,
is it like
the Angry
Birds?
Well,
it's Canarium. You know,
it's not that far from Flappy Birds, really. But anyway, here's the amazing thing I found out about it. First off, it's just a gorgeous, one of the best Lovecraftian video games I've ever seen. Like, they really get the world of Lovecraft and the feel of Lovecraft, and it kind of blew me away. And to the point where DM can speak to this, they actually got the language of Lovecraft right. Like, they have all of the guys speaking and writing in the overly ornate and slightly stilted Lovecraft style. Like, they're writing in his style.
It's not quite as dense as Lovecraft.
No, it is not.
But
that's
it is
true.
Still, it's very...
affected in that way.
Yeah, I was going to say florid.
Florid works too.
Yeah, but it is, yeah, very sort of a little arch at times, but yeah, great use of language.
And you could actually make the statement that, pitch the idea that because this is about characters in the early 1950s, they're still speaking more, as you say, floridly and archly, but it is less archaic than the 19-teens and 20s character from H.P. Lovecraft stories.
I thought it was 40s.
I think
50s?
It's late 40s. Well, it's definitely after World War II. It might be like 1951,
I think it's
though.
Late. Oh, I thought it was
worth
a little
checking.
Earlier than that. Anyway, whatever. The game was a little buggy, though. We did have some problems.
We did have some problems. And I found out a possible reason why with this piece of information that's probably going to blow your mind.
Okay.
The entire game was made by three people.
Whoa.
Yep. That entire gorgeous puzzle game was made by three people.
Holy crap.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Rob, you can always check out footage of this on the channel, but it is amazing to think that such a tiny team did this amazing amount of work. And I say this a lot about the game, but it is gorgeous. Like, their depiction of H.P. Lovecraft cities is just fantastic.
When is it expected to hit wide release?
It is available on Steam now. It has just come out on Steam.
Okay.
Yeah, so right. be sure to give it a look. It is it's an adventure game with a couple of simple puzzles, light horror elements. There isn't a lot of blood and corpses or anything like that. And it just feels incredibly H.P. Lovecraft. They've done a really good job about the whole exploration into the unknown and the madness that lies Excellent. Just beyond, you know, the world that we're all living in. Just a superb job. Love Canarium. Think it's truly a special thing. And I'm, you know what? I'm really hoping it gets even more popular than it obviously will be. All right. So next up.
TV.
Watch Twin Peaks, everybody.
Oh.
It might be an obvious thing to say, and I'm sure we've got a bunch of TV Twin Peaks fans here on the show, but yeah, watch Twin Peaks. It's really good. Yeah. It's so strange and so
it's
weird,
not, like,
and so interesting.
Alienating and off-putting. It's just...
Well.
Yes. It is, but in a very exciting way. And I know that it's strange to make this statement because it's going to sound like I'm giving something too much of a pass, but understand what I'm saying, that it's like there is a value in watching a show or where you literally have no idea what's going to happen next. Like, it breaks all kinds of rules of how television shows are structured, even how individual scenes within television shows are structured. I mean, how sentences are structured. It is so its own thing and so their own vision. And is it like the original Twin Peaks? No, it's not. I mean, it really isn't. It is only like the craziest moments of the original Twin Peaks or the movie Fire Walk With Me. Because Twin Peaks was very openly a satire of nighttime soap operas while being its own thing as well. And so it used the visual language and the structural expectations of nighttime soap operas to make sure people were really interested and involved in the show, even as it was subverting them and doing really interesting, strange things. Whereas this has no need, like, they believe there is no need to do anything that prosaic as pretend it's something that it isn't. It is just a strange show about bizarre metaphysics and stuff we don't understand. So, by all means...
So, is it tangentially related to...
It is a 100% sequel. 100% sequel.
Okay.
It picks up directly after the events of the last episode because... Well, if you'll recall, we find in the... I think, first or second episode, he has the dream of Laura Palmer, but it's 25 years in the future... And she talks to him, and he tries to communicate and can't. We pick up this show, that 25 years in the future, with him. He's been stuck in the Red Room for those 25 years, and the show just picks up right from there. So I'm not going to spoil anything.
So then,
it's worth it.
Because I read where Showtime is now. They've now released the first the first few seasons for those
the first
who
two
are
seasons, yeah the original yeah. two seasons of the show to get caught up,
right, who are unacquainted with it can get caught up. And that's why I was wondering if it was worth revisiting just to kind of brush up on your Lynchian terms and
remind yourself of who all the characters are. I think that's a bad idea, especially because, and you know, RIP Miguel Ferrer. It's worth watching the original show just to see him as Albert Rosenfield. Just one of the great all-time TV characters. Like, he stole the show whenever he was on that show, which is why they kept bringing him back over and over again, because he was so good on that show. So yeah, I would recommend both. I recommend both the original Twin Peaks, which I'm just rewatching now because I'm so excited about the new one, and the new episodes, which... They're not the same, but they're amazing.
Okay.
Excellent.
All right.
We have nothing to add.
Why would you?
I want to mention a TV show, which I can't believe went unmentioned. I probably just forgot to talk about it.
Yeah.
But Archer Dreamland.
I know.
Finished a few weeks ago.
Oh, yes.
And
what
holy
a show.
Crap, was that ever good? Oh my God.
Well, just the because if you noticed last season, the previous season with the private detective stuff, how he kind of was more less and less interested in being an episodic show. And for this to be not episodic at all, but just to be a 3.5 hour long Archer movie, wow, it's so good. I'm glad I waited until it was over to just watch it all back to back. Because there are still story breaks, but fundamentally, it's just Archer the movie. But if he was a detective in 1940s Los Angeles, obviously. But yeah,
Well,
it's
it's
so
like you
good
had
this
mentioned
year.
earlier about the video game, like you mentioned earlier about the video game being just created by essentially three people. This show continually amazes me and astounds me that Adam Reed single-handedly penned every word to every season of Archer thus far. I like what
Amazing.
a prolific mind this guy has. He is just amazing, his ability to sponge every, pop culture, but also these just tangential references that you have, like, where the hell did you
Where is
get
that
that
coming
from?
from?
I
I
just
know.
Right, like the guy invented the watermelon, that was one.
I know. Right,
Earth's
exactly.
elevators, like what, dude?
So,
Jeez.
okay, I have a question for you guys about, because you're both fans of Archer. You both know how this guy works. I'm gonna ask you a question. To what extent was this season, the whole existence of this season kicked off by someone reminding him or pointing out to him that Sam Spade's dead Parcher in the Maltese Falcon is named Archer?
You mean dead partner?
Yeah, his dead partner is named Archer
You didn't
in
say,
the
you
Maltese.
said
I know.
Parcher.
Yeah, I know. Dead partner in the Maltese Falcon named Archer. Like, how much was that what caused this season to happen? I feel like it's a lot.
I would have no doubt, because it seems to me like he just browses random pages of Wikipedia and he,
And then writes an episode about that. Well, actually,
exactly.
that was
Like,
sorry, that what I thought was funny was 2 years ago, that he was talking about how they were talking about the $6 Million Man and how you end up doing that and ridiculous episodic stuff. And how when he said that, he started going and browsing episode synopses of the $6 Million Man, and his takeaway was, literally any one of these would be a perfectly good episode of Archer. And that's how the Japanese guy he finds in the island came about, because he saw there was a $6 Million Man episode about that, and he's like, screw it, I'll just do this.
It amazes me. I mean, it just
Yeah,
seems
no,
like,
it's
some random things that you have in like fever dreams, or that you think of just in brief passing, like, I wonder who invented the semicolon. That becomes an entire throwaway that is well researched and documented and used as a punchline there, that you have to kind of go and scour the dark recesses of the internet to find the answer to get the joke and then still laugh at it.
So, and I gotta say that I think what blew me away there, right, was that the guts it took, first off, to do this whole episode. He did a cutaway, they do a cutaway at the start to acknowledge that the actor who played Woodhouse had died, which is very sad, but he's killed off in the show too. But they do this cutaway at the beginning and show him in a coma, and then they never cut away for the rest of the season, which I thought was very bold. And then they, in fact, end the season without cutting back to his hospital room ever, which I thought was a really gutsy move on their part. Yeah, like, and I'm
Well,
so interested to what
there's a
that
ton
means
of
for next
gutsy moves
year.
on there.
Well,
From,
yeah,
I
obviously.
mean, you I would even say turning them all into drug runners,
Was a
was just
pretty
as gutsy.
gutsy. While at the same time being a
Having
really good statement about how the CIA works.
And having our one of the most beloved characters like addicted to cocaine for the purposes of
Whole
comedy. I
season.
mean, that was
Oh God, as she got hotter and hotter over the season. And she lost all of the cocaine weight. Such an amazing season, the Archer Vice. But then again, I mean, it's not like they've had a bad season. It's Archer. It's a really good show. Yeah, and I'm just I can't wait to figure out what he wants to do next year, because whatever it is, I think we're all going to be there for.
Yes, definitely.
Absolutely.
So, I understand you saw some movie trailers?
Oh, yeah. Well, I saw another trailer. I can't remember if you talked about this on the show. And I don't know if you guys saw the trailer when you were in theaters earlier this weekend, but it was another trailer for Geostorm.
Yes, I saw it.
Oh, we didn't get that.
I can't wait to see this movie. It looks amazing.
So bad.
It looks so
bad. Do you know
great.
What blew me about? Like, I just love that this is a Gerard Butler movie, where literally, if you watch that trailer, you would have no idea that he is the star of the movie.
In that movie? He's nowhere
He's
near
the star of that movie.
Really?
He's in one shot of the trailer. And you have to be looking for him.
That's awesome.
Isn't that crazy?
I love disaster movies. But just the idea, it's like, oh, the satellite that controls the weather controls the world. It's like, well, of course it does.
I know.
Like, I don't understand why, like, you're trying to make it sound like,
if
I don't
that's
know,
sinister
like,
or surprising
yeah, exactly.
or anything.
Of course
like,
it controls
well, yeah,
the world.
we all rely on the weather 100%. It's what allows us to live on Earth. That's not a controversial
well, not
statement.
Us in America here. Let's
right,
say,
right.
It's true. I understand you guys went to war with the weather recently.
There's a debate about that whole science thing that you all talk about, you and your magic and your witchery and all.
To quote Arrested Development, I heard the jury's still out on science.
That's exactly right, Joe.
Oh my God. But yeah, Geostorm. So Dean Devlin finally made his own movie, wrote and directed. And it was so bad that it didn't come out for 3 years. And they brought in somebody else to shoot 40 new minutes of it.
Wow.
Yeah, that is not a vote of confidence from a studio.
Jesus Christ. Well, anyway.
I can't feel
I'm
good, but yeah.
Yeah.
No, but it's going to be interesting. But just the idea that this movie was supposed to come out. Oh, sorry. Yes, you're going
to
say?
No, all I can say is that those in the Secret Service here are rushing to get it to the presidential watching room so that hopefully he'll think it's a documentary and therefore make rejoin the Paris.
Although he may think of it the wrong way, and it's like, well, if this climate's such a big problem, why don't we just turn on the weather machine, like in that movie?
Right.
We'll just build a wall.
Build a wall against the weather. And the funniest part is, though, like, this is a movie where this almost never happens, where last year it got a big advertising push because it was supposed to come out last fall.
Really?
And then for whatever reason, And then they pulled it in North America, but it already came out everywhere else. So it has already bombed all over the world.
Oh, right on.
But because they spent so much money on it, they're still trying to get that whole, we need to make some money back, so let's try and trick people to give us a good first weekend here before it bombs in America, too.
So did the extra 40 minutes, did the extra 40 minutes include sharks coming from the sky at all?
God, I hope so, because that would rescue it.
I feel like that's been played out.
Well, they're making a fifth
one, so who
knows? Tara
Reid still needs a paycheck. Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to a little thing called movies.
Okay.
Two bits of movie news this week. Bit one, and this is something that I haven't seen this movie, and I don't want to gloat or anything like that, but I assumed the idea of making a Baywatch movie was a terrible idea.
Oh, I secretly want to see that movie.
I respect that. And I openly tweeted about this. Look, I said, look, everybody go see Baywatch, because if it does well, we'll get a Baywatch Nights movie in which Dwayne the Rock Johnson fights vampires and the things and maybe the blobs all in one movie. And it would be the best movie. But anyway, it was a bomb, as I suspected it would be. But here's the thing that I didn't understand, and I'm going to say this, and it's just, it's crazy to me that I have to say this thing, but I do. You can't watch Baywatch on any streaming service. No North American streaming service has the show Baywatch.
Oh, I thought you said the movie.
Sorry, the TV show.
Oh.
I know. And I'm like, here's the thing. I'm not a highly paid Hollywood movie executive.
Christ.
I think everyone knows that.
Hey, now.
I know. Well, we all know they're prostitutes. Come on. But anyway, I'm not a highly paid Hollywood movie executive. But were I in the giant mega corporation that just greenlit a Baywatch movie, I would make it job one to make it so people, to make sure that people could watch Baywatch. Because there's Absolutely. An entire generation of moviegoers out there born after Baywatch went off the air.
Yeah, and well, anyone who's seen that movie to watch Zac Efron strut around topless has not seen Baywatch.
I know. So give them the chance to see Baywatch. Like, how was that not job one?
There's an entire generation out there who does not know the name Yasmin Bleeth, and I think that is a crime.
No, it's very sad. For a lot of reasons.
It is. You know?
Well, it's a
who
good news.
Who only know
though,
Carmen Electra it, from so. Her, like, rap career or whatever it is she does now. Sorry, who only know
she
Carmen
does,
Electra.
She does time, unfortunately.
As the kind of woman who poses for things at the launch of new vodkas.
Mm.
Like, they only know her that
way. I know, she's gleefully stealing jobs from Tila Tequila everywhere she travels.
Yeah, but who like literally only know what do you call it?
Flat Earther. So I'm okay.
Yeah,
with it.
But it's like who have never heard of Pamela Anderson? You know, like there's a generation out there who it was their job to tell them about this world of this show, and they didn't do that in the least, and that's crazy to me. Because how do you screw that up? All right, so that's You're movie right. news number one. Movie news number two, God bless the internet, because they found the movie that The Hateful Eight was based on.
Oh, what is
yeah.
it?
Really?
Yeah, it's based on a movie. It is
well,
a remake.
Surprising
like most
no one.
Of the,
yeah, Tarantino movie it's like, based on another movie.
Yeah, no, it is a remake, just like a lot of his movies. But this time he really went deep there was this movie called The Rebel, which was like the kind of movie that was made specifically to be the bottom half of double bills in like 1951. So no one had heard of this movie, but some film expert was like, oh yeah, I remember a movie that opens with a guy taking a female prisoner from one place to another, and he runs into another bounty hunter who's lost his horse and is just walking around with a saddle, and they go to not a haberdashery, but just a stagecoach post that for some reason the normal boss is gone and everyone there is really shifty. And then the bounty hunter gets poisoned. And then it turns out the people who were there are in on it and trying to free her. Like every plot point of the movie, it's the exact same movie.
And now you just totally ruined Hateful Eight for me. Thanks.
Well, you know what? It came out a year and a half ago. You should have seen it by now. If you didn't want
it spoiled. Spoiler alerts at this point.
FBI,
yeah, exactly.
Like, when Rob was on the show to talk about one of the superhero movies last year, we talked extensively about the plot of The Hateful Eight then.
I might not have
And
been
it's been a
time.
Year. So, you know, I think I'm fine. But yeah, like literally, Quentin Tarantino took the entire plot of this movie, added a bunch of swearing and racism, and called it a new movie. Oh, and of course, just super gross violence. Just
he had to add racism
gross.
To a movie made in the 1950s.
Well, there's nobody who's
right.
not white in the movie. There's nobody who's not white in the movie,
oh,
so they didn't
I
have
see.
The opportunity
okay.
to be racist.
I would say updated.
Updated it. Okay, there you go.
Yeah,
anyway, so yeah,
go.
It's called
modernized.
It's called
the
Rebel.
Modernized
and, yeah, it's called the Rebel, and it's once again Quentin Tarantino's beloved habit of not paying people to adapt to movies. He loves not paying people to adapt to movies. It's a very strange quality of his. Although, you know what? So does Darren Aronofsky. There, I said it. Black Swan is just Perfect Blue.
Oh, Perfect Blue.
I know, it's a rough one.
Oh, man, it's such a good movie.
It's this anime from the 90s that Darren Aronofsky fell in love with and remade as Black Swan, but then doesn't admit that he was remaking it.
It is so good.
It's incredible. Like, it's one of those...
It's amazing.
If you want to see just a wow, just dramatic anime, it's 100% the one you want.
Well, it's a bit of a thriller.
It's also a thriller.
It's a psychological thriller, but it's just, it's incredible. And it's like very hard to watch at times.
Oh,
and
totally.
It will like kind of break your mind a little bit. And yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it is about going down a rabbit hole as someone loses their mind, kind of a movie. Which, yeah. And so is Black Swan. Yeah. People are like, in case you, and I loved when I watched the video about how much it was. They're like, just in case you think Black Swan wasn't just in case you think Darren Aronofsky hasn't seen Perfect Blue, here's the shot from Requiem from a Dream that is a 100% exact copy of a shot from Perfect Blue.
Oh God.
Her in the bathtub screaming
was
underwater.
Was it the famous scene? Oh,
no,
darn it. Never
whatever
mind.
Disgusting thing you're about to say.
I was thinking more Jennifer Connelly. Never mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jennifer Connelly screaming underwater in a bathtub is the exact shot from the movie Perfect Blue. All right, so yeah, they found that one. I was kind of impressed they had. So, because you know what, the internet is full of everybody knows everything somewhere on the internet.
It's true.
It's just a good thing to remember. Yes. All right, so are they still making horror movies?
Yeah, I had a look. They are still making horror movies. That means I have a horror movie to share with you today.
Yay.
Oh my God. It is called The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then Bigfoot.
What?
No.
Is this just one of those?
I have a feeling this title will change.
Okay, because is this one of those things where the title is a lie? Because David Ducoteau just put out a movie called D.B. Cooper versus Bigfoot that featured no D.B. Cooper in it.
Was there a Bigfoot?
Yeah, there was a Bigfoot.
Oh,
but the point is, it was mostly just, you know, shirtless men at a cabin for the weekend. But my
really?
Point is...
I'm surprised at that.
From him? I know. It's a real departure. But the point
did
is,
it have a talking cat?
Oh, God, if only. No, but it did have Eric Roberts doing voiceover.
Oh, okay. Well,
no. Yeah, he's like, and Susan Olsen?
No, I don't think so. But anyway, so yes, what is this movie about?
Okay, so if you think that the title has nothing to do with the movie, let me read you the synopsis.
Okay.
The story follows a legendary American war veteran named Calvin Barr, who is played by Sam Elliott.
Nice!
Who, decades after serving in World War II and assassinating Adolf Hitler, must now hunt down the fabled Bigfoot. Living a peaceful life in New England, the former veteran is contacted by the FBI and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to leave a charge as the creature is carrying a deadly plague and is hidden deep inside the Canadian wilderness.
Oh my God, are you saying that Bigfoot has Ebola, and if they don't kill him, he'll spread it to everyone? Because that might be the best idea for a movie ever.
So.
Oh, fantastic.
I know.
Could he also turn on the switch for a geostorm? That's way better.
I hope so. He's got the launch codes. Bigfoot's got the football.
Right.
Oh my God, a movie. Seriously, just the idea of a movie where Bigfoot gets the nuclear football. And we're afraid that Bigfoot is going to launch nukes.
Bigfoot's gone nuclear.
By the way, now we just have to make that movie.
Nuclear Bigfoot?
Yep.
There has to be a title related to the Doomsday Clock.
Oh. Like,
1 minute till Bigfoot.
God.
All right, there's your title for the episode. And that way we can't ever forget that we came up with that idea. But anyway, if and when that movie ever actually comes out, we are watching the hell out of it here on the show.
It's supposed to come out in 2018, currently in pre-production.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, pre-production. That might never happen because it sounds too beautiful to be real. But if it ever comes out, rest assured, we will be covering it here on the show.
So there you go.
All right. So I guess that's finally it for random crap. Let's move on to what we're here to talk about. We've got a twofer this week. Because I was worried that we were all going to agree too much that our main thing was high quality, I got something else for us to all read and discuss, and that is the will never be made Friday the 13th, 2015 script.
Yeah.
So we've all had time to look it over, have a look, and see how this feels. And I'm going to do this. Oh no, wait, you have a synopsis ready. I was about to steal that from you, and I apologize.
It's Friday the 13th.
In 3D.
It's not.
Camp counselors, yeah, I know, get killed at camp. Like, it's a Friday the 13th.
What's weird, though, is the title, the front page says 3D, mm-hmm. but the guy who's writing it assiduously wants to make it so Jason's kills 99% of the movie are at the edge of frame and in the deep background.
Oh, no, the deep background. So I'm like, is it a joke? Is this a satire of 3D?
Like, it's hard to tell, because it's like, this would be the least satisfying 3D movie ever. And I mean, right. I normally find them unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah, that would just be like him, like Jason squishing a head and then the camera panning away right before the eyeball pops out.
Exactly, yeah. Right? So it is the year 1988. We are at Camp Crystal Lake. They've compressed the backstory so that Jason, the original Rampage happened in the 60s, and instead of just killing two people then and coming back later, basically the whole first movie, Friday the 13th, happened the year after Jason died. Or did he? He did. Long story short. Right? The whole movie... He did. Happened back then. I know, right? And so now it's 20 years late. It's 25 years later. The camp is open again. Yes, that's true.
That's an important
camp across the river.
New camp.
Yeah, Camp Forest Green is there, essentially. They didn't change the name of the camp, the lake or anything, but Camp Forest Green is there, and they've just had a pretty successful summer, and now a group of sexy young teens are going to get murdered by Jason.
Yeah.
Which is where we come in. And I gotta say, overall, I think I really enjoyed this script. I think it was really well done. But yeah, I have a bunch of misgivings.
Okay.
And I don't... Okay. This is gonna sound strange. I think it would be a good movie. I don't know if it would be a good Friday the 13th movie.
Why do you say that? Yeah.
Because first off, they don't understand that Jason is a force of, like, Jason is basically a tornado hitting your town.
He's a
geostorm. Jason is like a geostorm, basically, where it's just something that happens. Making the people responsible for Jason showing up rubs me the wrong way, because I don't feel that's what Jason is. Jason is not coming here to get back at you for something you did. He's not Freddy Krueger getting revenge for stuff that happened with the parents. He's not the guy from I Know What You Did Last Summer knowing what you did last summer. He is just an ongoing tragedy that just happens. Like, and it's like in the Evil Dead remake, they had to go to these ridiculous lengths to go, oh no, it's their fault that they get attacked by demons. No, demons just attack.
Yeah.
It's fine. It actually makes it scarier, because it makes it look like you'd have to be an idiot to be attacked by demons. But what's scary about Jason is that if you don't know he lives there and you go there, you're in trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
And there is a simplicity to Jason that I've always respected. And adding this extra level, A, that you have to provoke him, and B, and this is going to sound strange that I'm objecting here, but I am going to, that he is a giant, supernaturally strong monster, I think is a mistake to go to, especially in the first film in the franchise, because where can you go from here? Like, if this guy's whole idea was this will be the only Friday the 13th movie that ever gets made, I could say go for it. But if you're trying to set up a new franchise, making him already 100% a supernatural entity that is 100% unkillable, I think that's a mistake.
I don't know if I agree necessarily with that, because maybe you're trying to kickstart a new Friday the 13th franchise, but you can't ignore the fact that one already exists and has existed for a long time. And so people have a certain expectation with regards to Jason and what he can and can't do. And you can't, I think it's too hard to start all over again, to start from scratch and build up the character in the same way, because people are going to be dissatisfied with what they see of Jason on the screen if you want to go like back to the beginning.
I can see your point, but I don't know if I agree with that because I don't think that this movie is being made for longtime fans of Jason. And I think that there
But you don't
hasn't
need to be.
been.
Jason is well known enough that you know that he's some unkillable thing, that he is superpower, that he's a supernatural entity or presence or force, even without having watched the Friday the 13th movie. And people,
See,
and so
I
everyone,
don't
like
know that
people,
you're.
new fans and old fans would go and see this, as what happened with 2009 Friday the 13th, which was an unmitigated disaster. And
Right.
but not because Jason was a super powerful supernatural being, because it was just a shitty film.
Yeah.
I've lost my point.
No, and I mean you're making a strong argument about what, and I'm just saying my idea is that the public conception of Jason does not involve him having superpowers. I think people know that there is a guy in the ho in a hockey mask, and if you go to Crystal Lake, he'll kill you. And that he's really hard to kill. But the idea that he is a magic creature that is literally impossible to kill, I don't know if that is part of the public's understanding of what Jason is. Rob, you're not.
So,
I'm famously the biggest Jason fan
yeah,
in the
I don't know if
world.
you can really wait, like,
No,
And
so.
Rachel has watched them all a bunch. What you, as someone who's more casually aware of Jason, how do you feel about him, and how do you think about how he was presenting in this script?
Oh no, so I'm not even casually. I mean, I was weaned on him. That was,
Okay.
but watching him on HBO, that was one of my earliest memories, is watching the when it finally was released on HBO, and we snuck over a friend's house and were able to watch it and see
That's
him
awesome.
emerge from the water. It was fantastic. Seriously, it was one of my earliest movie-going
Okay,
experiences.
good.
So, in looking at this, and I'll, I have to confess that I have not read the entire thing yet. Having just received it yesterday, I kind of just looked over, and I'm about halfway through it. But what I will say is that in setting this in the 80s is really important to this, and the reason is it that automatically by default you are holding this film up for some sort of parody, because if it's in the 80s, there's going to be a nod to 80s fashion and 80s, you know what I mean? So
The
there's
music plays a big part in
Right,
the script.
exactly.
Yeah.
So there's going to be an element of and it can be as loving an homage as possible, but there's still an element of just of kind of snickering and laughing about it just by mere default that it's in the 80s. I mean, that's
Yeah.
we all kind of look back on that decade with just kind of a laugh and an eye roll. So by setting it there, I think he's setting it up for a bit of the parodic elements, but I can't erase from my mind, and perhaps this is one of the reasons why it didn't, even though this film wasn't huge, a film called The Final Girls, released in
Oh, great
2015,
movie.
which was as loving a tribute to those films as there could possibly be. And it not only just perfectly captured the era in which those were made, but it was also thrilling, it was also exciting, and it was drop dead hysterical, and no pun intended, but it was really, really funny. So I think that it's going to be compared, it would have been compared to that in one way, shape, or form, even though, like I said, this movie's not well known yet. I really think that that's a film that's going to garner an audience and a lot of respect, much like Wet Hot American Summer has and things of that nature, because I feel like that was just a really, really, it's a tough balance to, you either have to kind of, you know, shake the Etch-A-Sketch and make it completely new, like they tried to in 2009, and like you said, failed on a nuclear level, or when you're you know, calling back to it like this does, then, you know, there's going to be some, you have to have some comparisons, because that's people by default, people are going to say, oh, wow, that's that, you know, I have to go back and look at the original to see if they really dress like that, or do they really listen to that music, or they literally, you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be some, it's going to evoke some comparisons there. So I think I couldn't tell the overall tone with this, just exactly how they were going to play that, because it's a balance that I wasn't sure if they were going to err on the side of more seriousness, or if they were going to kind of take this as a, hey, you know, take this ride with us, you're going to have a good time kind of vibe.
Yeah, I can see that. It's I'm not going to say that as you get further into the script, it is clear what the final tone is going to be. I don't know that it's ever really clear. I think the director and the producer would have had a lot to say on there. It's not like it has winks in it. It takes itself very seriously. But I think what really sticks with me is there is a scene, and I mean, you didn't see this because it's right at the end of the movie, where Jason kills like 15 people. And it's so more into, yeah, no, but they want to have a giant massacre scene where Jason kills a bunch of people in public. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I really feel like that's a mistake for the character, and I think it's a mistake for the franchise.
You know what? Personally. That to me is, it's funny you mentioned that, because that to me is exactly the way I felt with, we went back, and I'll talk about this later in Narcissism Watch, but we're showing Jaws 3D. In 3D, yeah. And all of, I just noticed it upon this repeat viewing, is all the kills and all the attacks and all the investigations took place at night. And I was like, that is fundamentally just so wrong against everything that made Jaws so terrifying, is that it took place in broad daylight, right beneath your feet at any given time. And here, you know, night's already scary. That's what made it so terrifying, is that it could happen while you're just enjoying a sunny day at the beach. So I see exactly what you're saying there, that because we came to the same conclusion with Jaws 3D.
Yeah, and here it's this strange choice, because a really strange thing is all of the horror in this movie pretty much happens in broad daylight.
Right.
You get through the script, in this script. And again, I don't know if I can, like, it's conceptually a really interesting idea, but, and this is, it's weird the way in which, to me, it feels like Jason fan fiction is A, the massacre scenes, which tend to happen in Jason fan fiction, B, you know, much higher body counts, blah, 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 blah. But another thing that so much Jason fan fiction does that none of the original movies do, except for Part 8, is they let people find out about Jason way too early in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Whereas, like, in most Friday the 13th movies, he stalks people, he stays in the shadows, he kills one by one. In fan fiction, he will show up a third to halfway through, and he'll just start killing people, and the entire second half of the story will just be people running away from a Jason who is actively chasing them. And they know he's there,
right.
And you have to come up with reasons for him to not, them not to be able to get away 90% of the time, which means he has to be superpowered. And that's what I guess rubbed me the wrong way about this. I liked the guy's character work. I liked the characters he created. I liked the background off camera Jason kills. I was even interested by the fact that a lot of the horror happens in the daytime. Like, it was an interesting turn. But if he was doing 100% his own thing, that's fine. But the fact that it's supposed to be a Friday the 13th movie, I couldn't sign off on it not at all feeling like a Friday the 13th movie, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right.
All right. So that is my harsh criticism of a really good screenplay. Because I just want to say, fundamentally, it is a really good screenplay. Like, it's just, it's got more of the, you know.
And that's something Count likes.
Oh, it's terrible. Imagine what I'm gonna say about Wonder Woman.
Oh. Right.
Hey,
right,
speaking of, we all watched Wonder Woman.
We did. Okay, so here's my very brief synopsis of Wonder Woman. Dinah leaves Themyscira in order to kill Ares, believing him to be responsible for the Great War.
Yeah, that is true.
Yep. That's that.
And of course, and I'm like, do you know what I actually thought? I'm like, are they going to say that Ares was that random Serbian anarchist who oh my God, I'm blanking on the prince's name.
Franz
this is
Ferdinand.
So embarrassing. Franz Ferdinand. Who killed Franz Ferdinand?
Right,
and
right,
no, that
right.
is not the way they are going with it. Because it's like, actually, we know, because they talk a lot in the movie about, you know, how war is just a thing that humans do. And I'm like, actually, we know the name of the specific person who started the Great War. Like, it actually was one guy, and we know who it was. So I thought that was kind of funny. But no, that is not the way they want to take this story. It is not the story. Ares is not that random guy. Although maybe Ares convinced that random guy to blow
well, there
to
you go, because he's convincing a bunch of other people to do stuff, so why not?
Yeah. Why not, right? Maybe my theory was correct. So yeah, this is the best reviewed, the best reviewed DC Comics movie. And I gotta say, it is not damning with faint praise this time, because it actually is a good movie.
Well, it is the best of the Snyderverse DC movies. And
by
I see that
shot,
having only
close.
Seen one other Snyderverse DC movie.
She
but
only
can
saw
we
Suicide
really
Squad.
Even say that, you know, that's the best way to die. I mean, we're grading on a curve here. I mean, there's not a lot of high bars that this universe has set
that's
so
true.
Far. So
that's true.
So that's true.
By saying it is the best is really
again,
just kind of
yeah.
What's your
with
favorite?
Frank, Frank, absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and the thing is, we have this problem where, and I'm going to say this about the movie, which is since a little movie called Batman Begins. The DC theory has been it has to be impossible to enjoy yourself while out of the superhero.
Yes.
Like, you're not allowed to have a good time at the movies. No, this is serious stuff. Now, by comparison, just as a note, I love Bane. And I'll never stop talking about how much I love Bane. But the fact that I love Bane doesn't, you know, completely oversell the... overlook, cause me to overlook the fact that... It's not possible to enjoy watching any of those movies. You can't have a good time at those movies. They
I'm
are
going to go a different way, but
they are slogs to get through. Like, they are dark, unpleasant movies to watch. And Snyder doubled down on the unpleasantness of Christopher Nolan's universe. They're like, no, not only should it be a slog to watch, there should be no color in this world. Everything should be black
no
and white.
No color.
No humor.
Yes. Let's
no
kill the
love.
Lights. Yes.
Yes. Which, by the way, I was saying to Lazy Writer as we were walking out of the movie, how isn't it weird that in the entire like Snyderverse movies, the best lit fight scene in all of them was Batman killing six mercenaries in a warehouse? That time when he killed those six mercenaries in the warehouse. And I'm like, that was the best lit fight scene he ever did. And it's the best that the Snyderverse has had until this movie. But it's just so weird that a fight scene that you would normally think, oh, it's a warehouse. Batman's going to kill the lights and he's going to be stealthy. No, he just walks in a super well lit room and kills a bunch of guys like he's Jason or something. And that was the best lit scene in any of those movies. Whereas this one... You know what? Stuff can happen during the day, it seems.
Yes.
It can actually be bright out.
Well, I was going to write this very critical piece of the Snyderverse called The Sun Never Shines in the DC Universe.
Yeah.
But I never finished writing it. So now it turns out, well, no, the sun still doesn't shine. It only it shines on Themyscira, but really nowhere
sun
else.
Only
in
shines
the world.
On, although, weirdly, The Sun Only Shines on Themyscira is not a bad title.
That's true.
It's actually
it's
a pretty
so
good title.
True.
I would.
Well, and you look at it, even on, and it's quite literal, because even on the other side, when the soldiers break through, I mean, they are through this murky, cloudy, you know, mist filled ocean
bank,
until they break through, inexplicably break through the wall that's protecting them. But it's I think, we're getting to one of the fundamental aspects of Snyder's universe that I think he just completely misunderstands, and that is with the Dark Knight, by definition, that is the one true superhero that is worthy of being cloaked in darkness, in having that moody atmospheric look. Once you want that to include everyone else, guess what? They're dressed in brightly colored pajamas. So, it's you can't take them as seriously as you did the Dark Knight. I mean,
No, it's not
Superman
going to happen.
is right. He's wrapped in an American flag, for fuck's sake. You've got, Wonder Woman, who is an Amazonian princess. You've got a man who talks with fish for a living. So, I mean, these
These are
aren't
not
like,
dark figures.
this.
No,
Yeah,
they
these
really
aren't
aren't. You're
like
absolutely
brooding
right.
characters.
Yeah,
Yeah.
well, that's, I
So
mean, again,
that.
it just further reinforces the point that Zack Snyder is totally tone deaf.
Well, no, but
Totally.
it's like DC had this crazy idea, and it really is a crazy idea. It's like, so we're going to be building an entire linked Avengers style universe of superhero movies. Okay, who should we put in charge of that? And then somebody puts their hand up. Hey, you know that guy who doesn't understand superheroes and actively dislikes comic books? Yes, let's put him in charge. And that
The
was
guy
their
who put all
plan.
the homoeroticism in ancient Greece and liked to watch
No.
greasy men fight. Yes.
That guy.
That's the guy. That's the guy we want. Like, what? No, that is the opposite of the guy you want.
Also, they did themselves a real disservice when they hired him specifically to set the tone for their
Yeah.
cinematic universe. And it's
That's
like,
it. That's it.
you shouldn't have done that. Like, you can hire him to make a Superman movie, and
I
that's
mean, you
great and
shouldn't.
all, but they specifically asked him to set the tone for all future movies.
And decide what that world is.
And yeah, and it was a huge misstep because, again, he doesn't understand this world, is completely tone deaf, and DC as a whole totally misunderstood how and why the Marvel Cinematic Universe works so well, because everyone who's a part of that universe, they're allowed to bring their own style to the
And their
film
own energy.
and their own energy to the films that they make. And so each film has its own particular flavor. And yeah, they tie into an overall arc that's being told over countless years in films. And
But there isn't
DC
that kind of concrete house style.
fundamentally doesn't understand that.
But you have to look
Yeah.
no further than Taika Waititi being, pegged to direct the latest Thor. I mean, my God, I mean, the guy is brilliant. I love him. But I can't even see the Marvel universe or the DC universe saying, "Hey, let's take this guy from New Zealand who's known mainly for these wonderfully witty, smaller indie movies and put him in charge of it." I mean, yes, Patty Jenkins was a stretch, and I think she's probably the reason why Wonder Woman
It's as
is
good as it
good.
is.
Is exactly it. You can almost tell. When Snyder like walked onto the set and said, "Not too much lighting here. Let's kill this. Oh, let's get a baby. Let's gas a baby in this picture, or let's make sure this one doesn't have a leg or something like that." I mean, it's like we're having too
Jesus.
much fun here, people. Come on, come on. Remember the Holocaust.
Oh
Ugh, oh,
God. And
Jesus.
hey, speaking of, it is interesting that it's like, let's set it in World War I, because I guess the idea is Marvel owns World War II and
Yeah,
they had
yeah.
to differentiate themselves, because no
Right,
matter,
exactly.
yeah, it's like, the thing is, no matter how much you point out that every single DC character fought in World War II and Marvel didn't exist as a company yet, you're never going to get over the fact that Captain America is the definitive World War II hero.
Right,
Uh,
right.
yeah, yeah.
And how much, I gotta say, this film, and I don't want, again, I don't this want this to sound like an insult, but it might, really does feel like just a better version of Captain America, the First Avenger.
Well, Captain America: First Avenger is a really bad movie,
No,
so
but I'm just saying,
not.
structurally, it's a really similar movie because it's about, just the naive person coming into the war, and then there's this guy with a plan to take out an entire city, and then at the end, the character
Who has
Steve
a
has to
shield?
sacrifice himself the character Steve
name shit, yeah,
has to sacrifice himself by crashing a super bomber before it blows up either London or New York. Like, these, that's the specific similarities between those two movies. They're really close. No, and you're right. She even throws a shield, for God's sake.
Exactly.
She throws a shield to use it as a weapon. And there is literally no difference between the team she puts together and the Howling Commandos. They're the same characters. There just isn't a black guy in this team.
Fair enough.
There's an Indian guy instead, which was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, and I'm sure that's based on something from George Perez comics. I don't know, but because I haven't read a lot of George Perez's Wonder Woman that this is all based on. But I'm going to ask you guys a casting question.
Okay.
Do you think that they wanted it to exist, the possibility to exist in our minds, even for a split second, that she could have been right about Danny Houston being Ares? Because for my money, the moment you cast Danny Houston, there's no way he could be Ares in my mind.
So, wait, go back. Your question was, so saying, do you think it...
Do you think that the filmmakers wanted it to wanted there to be a possibility in the audience mind that Danny Houston actually was Ares?
Yeah. The whole movie's structured around the audience thinking that he's Ares.
No, it's structured around the character thinking that he's Ares. But for me, I mean, first off, A, you're not going to cast Danny Houston as Ares. He's a creepy guy, but you don't believe for a second that he's a god. There's no dignity to Danny Houston. He's a creepy monster in all of his parts, but he does not, he can't play. I've never seen him once, and I've seen him in 20 movies play, you know, larger than life dignity. I just don't know that he can do it, and he's not who you get. And also, if you're a god, you don't need someone to give you meth to be able to fight.
But he was injured when he fought. Like, that comes up. It's like, oh, well, he's injured. Maybe he never even survived the fight. So when he's given the meth... It's like, oh,
no,
okay, well, and she's like, oh, this will bring you up to full power. It's like, okay, another sort of, just another plot point to kind of reinforce in the audience that this is most likely Ares.
Yeah, I see your point.
I
but
think
it just,
you're
I guess,
bringing your personal biases.
Feelings about, about Danny Houston. Yeah, and I agree that I am, because likewise, there is no reason to cast David Thewlis in a movie where he doesn't play the villain. It's David Thewlis.
Yeah.
Like, why would you ever cast him as not the villain? Like, I don't know if you're watching Fargo this season, Rob, but David Thewlis is the villain this year in Fargo, and he's amazing.
Okay, so here's the issue with all of that. Sorry, Rob,
no, take
ahead.
That as read. I agree.
Nope, go.
Okay, so I was gonna get to this later, but I'll just try to tie it all together now, and I'll try not to lose my point. So. Okay. At the first part of the movie on Themyscira, the Hippolyta makes a big deal about hiding something about Diana from Diana in order to and it has something to do with Ares. And the more Diana knows about herself, the easier it'll be for Ares to track her down. So you're expecting a big payoff or something like that later on in the movie, because it's a really big setup. Right. And then she meets Lord Peter, is that who he played?
Yeah, well, whoever David Thewlis is playing.
So she meets David Thewlis, and he's really not in the movie all that much, and he's just sort of bankrolling the expedition, and that's really about it. But you've got Danny Houston, stalking around Belgium and Germany, and the way the film is structured, you're meant to believe that he's Ares. And so when they have their final confrontation, it feels really anticlimactic, because you're like, oh shit, he's not Ares. Well, then who the fuck is Ares? If you're not familiar with David Thewlis, you're not immediately going to suspect that it's him, because he's not in the movie. Also,
no, he really isn't.
He recognized her. When he meets her the first time.
No, he does say that he did recognize her when they met right away.
And a god will know. There would be more going on with his character and his machinations.
You're completely right.
So It's just,
yeah.
it's
The film
not.
tries to explain that by having him say that he recognized her right away, but he thought, what the hell? I'll let her see what war is really like. Maybe she'll come around to my way of thinking.
No.
Like, the film does try to explain that because you're right that it is kind of a cheat. But the film does at least make an attempt to explain why he doesn't just kill her right away.
With that big exposition dump at the end.
I
Yeah,
know.
yeah.
Another,
They just all both
yeah.
stop for 5 minutes to chat about this.
So, and that, and like,
And by the way,
yeah.
and he doesn't make a persuasive argument at all.
No.
Like, even a little.
Well,
No. And I never, you don't think
I
so
don't.
when she's actually tempted. So it's like, well, okay, well, there's no really no conflict here.
I really don't think half of the conflict that we were talking about, half the conflict in the film, even during the I was going to say this for later too, but I will say that. But Chris Pine, who plays Steve Trevor, Chris Pine and Gal, is it Godot or Godot?
Godot.
Godot.
It is Godot, because I've heard it pronounced
Yeah.
Godot too. Okay, just making
I'm
sure.
pretty sure it's Godot.
So, okay, so they do have good chemistry together, I think. I felt
Yeah, they
like
do.
they really played well of each other, and I heard that she that Patty Jenkins, the director, had based this off Casablanca. Now, how often, you
Oh.
know? Yeah. So, and I feel like they that chemistry was essential, and I feel like they had it. That said, I don't feel like the writing in this, like, where there should have been some profound observations of war, or of why men fight, or you know what makes mankind so eager, and why we're. I felt like every time that there was an opportunity to really explain that and to go into some really deep, you know, even metaphorical explanations, it ended up with Chris Pine like kind of shrugging shoulders, like, I don't know, I don't know why. Doesn't I don't know, you know, like
Actually, you're
I
right. That
felt
really
like.
frustrated me because she's why isn't there a scene where, because she keeps saying that this war is happening because Ares happening, and he's like, so, and so he's like, no, that's not it. And she's like, well, then why is the war happening? He's like, who knows? I'm like, well,
Yeah.
you do know. Like, you do know
You do
why. I
know.
just said why the war is
Exactly.
happening, and it sucks. And the
Yeah.
way humanity organizes themselves that they allow this to happen does suck, but you can explain it in like 10 minutes.
It's
And we didn't
exact.
have to show us the whole 10 minutes, but he could have at least tried.
Right. And I felt like there were so many opportunities like that where they, you know, they even
Yeah.
talked about with love or anything. I mean, it doesn't have to be with war. There were so many different explanations because it seemed like that was the one frustrating thing. I mean, I marginally like this movie. Like I said,
Yeah.
it's probably the best of the four, but that's, you
Oh,
know,
it's
again,
definitely the best of the four.
picking your favorite scab. So
Yeah.
the but I felt like she as worldly as she or well read as she was, like read the 12 volumes of, you know, whatever it was, Kama Sutra's cousin or what
Yeah.
have you, of the pleasures of the flesh and so on and so forth. Yet she still felt like mankind operated like a light switch. Like the minute she extinguished
Yeah.
Ares, like they would all become good, and you know, the rainbows would start to
Yeah,
blossom
it's like
over
in
the,
all
you
of
know.
her, wait, so we're expected to believe that in all of her centuries of education, however old she's
Right.
supposed to be, because it's not
Yes.
clear, she still has the understanding of how humanity works. From a child's story she learned when she was eight?
And see, that's that. I just that's what I just I had a frustrating time trying to wrap my head around that. Thinking like, okay, she's savvy, she's a warrior, she's a princess, she's spent all this time, and she's you know, obviously a demigod that you know has powers to, you know, nuclear react her arms when they cross and so
Yeah.
on and so forth. But yet she has these very simplistic views when it comes to that, and she just she seemed genuinely, and this is part of the reason, I mean, she was good in the role because she did seem like genuinely perplexed as to why mankind didn't automatically start, you know, they grab a Pepsi like on the line of the you know Patty Jenkins commercial and
Nice.
start kissing with each other once the, you know, once the Ares was extinguished. So
Dealt
that
with,
was
yeah.
really frustrating to me, that aspect of it.
No, and as you say, I mean, the strong point is there that's like, that's a story you got told when you were eight. How can you
Yeah.
believe that that's how the world is organized if, and you're right to say, if you've read, you know, treatises on how human relationships and sex work, and you still don't understand what a war is.
Right. Right.
And honestly, you're right. It's just slop. It's sloppy writing is what it is.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Cause it's like they forgot that the myth part of it was just something that, and the thing is, it's even told to her as a fairy tale by her mother. It's not like it's told to her as a history by her mother. It's told to her as a bedtime story. And she still believes it at age 800 or 2000 or however old she is at that point.
But if they're deliberately keeping her in the dark about this stuff, I guess it's a way to kind of explain it away. But on the, like, going back to the script and how the script has a fair few problems that we are uncovering.
That we've,
right.
Because, like, I guess I, this there's no I can't there's no like causal relationship here, but I'll sort of build it up this way, that it has the script cheats war really, I guess, simplistically and naively, so that it can have this really schmaltzy ending, because it's like, cheesy isn't the right word for it, but just at the end, we're sort of like, love triumphs over hate and love conquers all. You can't have that kind of really naive end unless you have a really naive understanding of the conflict taking place.
Which the film seems to. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So this film has some problems, but I want to stress that I don't think it's a bad movie.
No, it's like, not I a really bad don't. Movie, and we're dumping all over it. I did enjoy it. I up to a point.
I really did enjoy watching this movie in the theater.
Yeah,
like, I really did.
When Ares enters the scene, it's I'm like, well, okay, it's a little late.
And by the way, one of my favorite things at the end of the movie is this idea that, and then love saved the day of war. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure lightning saved the day. I'm pretty sure she didn't love or forgive him to death. I'm pretty sure, like, he made the mistake of using lightning on a chick who's made of lightning. Her dad is Zeus.
Yeah.
She's literally made of lightning. What are you doing using lightning on her? Are you an idiot?
The answer is yes. Yeah. Yes.
The answer is yes. He's kind of an idiot. No, lightning saved the day. Although, and here's something that just from a writing standpoint, they really screwed up. They're like, Steve Trevor's got to sacrifice himself because he's got to stop this bomb. And I'm like, okay, so he's got to like crash it into the ocean. They're like, oh no, the things are made of hydrogen. Putting a single bullet into any one of the bombs will cause all of the gas to immolate like a giant explosion. Oh, so why couldn't a plane have just shot it down then?
So why couldn't you sink it? Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
Like, why couldn't a plane have just shot it down? Why does he got, there's anti-aircraft guns on this base. Just shoot it out of the sky. It'll blow up and everybody will be fine. Yep. No, if the blow up caused it to spread everywhere, that's why you couldn't shoot it out of the sky. But the blow up destroyed the gas. So if Steve had to crash it into the channel or something to destroy it, that I would have understood his sacrifice. But especially because the film would have begun and end with him drowning in a plane, it would have been nice and matching. But if you can just shoot it, why not just shoot it? You know?
It's on a time for that? Oh. And why is it on a timer? What the hell is that all about?
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's on a timer. We can't just, can't you just pull the timer off of it?
No, but why is it on a timer to begin with? It's like, if you don't reach a destination, it's just going to go off anyway. Is that what they were doing?
Yeah. No, that didn't make a lot of sense either. I'm saying they didn't really earn their noble sacrifice.
I do want to balance out my dumping all over, my initial reaction to dumping all over with some positives as well, too. I will say that Snyder should have taken copious notes from director Patty Jenkins and how to stage a fight sequence.
Oh,
because I think these were some of the best shot in the entire universe, like in the entire DC universe.
Oh, 100%.
Even from the opening, you know, sparring matches that she had with the fellow Amazonians to the climactic one where she goes into the village. You know, they were clear. You understood, you know, what she was up against. You understood, like, spatial relationships.
Yep.
You understood
Okay.
timing.
I would argue, I would argue that there is still too many cuts and still too much close-up,
yep.
but you were right that there is a sense of geography in these that has never yes. existed yes. in any of the other movies, and that is a huge improvement.
There is an artfulness to these
and physics.
Scenes. And physics. Yes, and physics. And yes. I maybe this is just me, and I blame, again, like, this is sort of a, I guess, a backhanded compliment.
please.
I felt like, or maybe I wanted to see this more than it was really apparent on the screen, that when the Amazons fought and when Diana fought, it was more artful and beautiful than when the men were fighting, which was really dirty and messy. And
absolutely
I thought that
true.
Like absolutely. Stylistically was like an excellent, like a really
such a good choice
to make. And it like, it played so well on screen.
No, it really
and
did.
And I almost think that was purposeful.
I would hope so.
I
almost think
to
that
be.
Was purposeful because there was almost a balletic performance
yes.
that you saw them. It was a dance. It was a dance they all did when the women were all battling each other. But still, there was a ferocity to it. Whereas, absolutely. Like you said, when it comes to the world of man, then there were errors. They were goofs. They were tripping over themselves. They were bullets that reflected off of them into their own heads, so on and so forth. So, yeah, I think that that was, you know, I'm hoping that was purposeful, and I do believe it was
it
because,
must have been.
Yeah, yeah, it was. There was some just beautiful choreography in those opening sparring sequences.
Yeah.
No, absolutely true. And I gotta say, like I said, yes, I mean, is it up to the level of the Marvel movies? No, it isn't. But, the better Marvel movies. There's a couple of Marvel movies this was worse than. But there's not many. but at the same time, I think this is a huge step forward for the franchise, and
totally.
We're about to take a huge step backwards with Zack Snyder's Justice League, which...
Oh,
there's a good chance it's going to be terrible.
Well, now it's Josh.
Josh
Whedon is finishing. I know Joss Whedon is finishing up the filming and doing the edit, so who knows what he can do with it. I guess we're going to see.
Rewrite the script, which is unfortunate.
Well, no. It's way too late to rewrite the script. They were, when he left, they were down to like something like 30 days left of shooting in a 150-day shooting schedule.
Yeah, but like
so.
Reshoots and pickups and stuff, so.
Yeah. Who knows? But yeah, you're right that
he's not allowed to take advantage of.
They could let him to do that, but no, he's not.
Yeah.
And the scripts have been historically terrible with these movies, so who knows what he can do. And I know it's about to take a big step back with that, but with the huge international success of this movie, because it is a giant success already, I hope that wakes them up to doing a better job in the future. You know, I'm keeping my fingers crossed that this is a lesson. And this isn't perfect, but it shows that they can do better.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I am now more... I didn't think this was a great movie. I thought this was a good movie, and it was a movie I enjoyed. But it has me optimistic about DC movies for the first time since they killed off Bane.
Well, I
like
don't know
a bunch
if it
of
should
idiots.
Be. Because this might be a one-off.
I
Unless
know.
They can pull their heads out of their asses.
But I think if they continue to allow these one-offs... And if you know Snyder is able to step away for as long as they can, you know, keep him off the set and keep him out of the writer's room, then perhaps it will live and die by the one offs, and you know we'll just kind of have to suffer through the ensemble pictures of them. But if they allow and again like Patty Jenkins, Jesus, I mean. She directed Monster before this. That was, I mean, that was some ballsy cat. No pun intended, but that was some.
Yeah. It's a daring choice.
It really was. I mean, as much as I liked Monster, it was a purely dramatic picture based solely on the strength of its lead actress, and to allow her with this tentpole. You know, the addition to a franchise was amazing that they allowed that to happen. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it really is a huge, you know, like you say, a ballsy choice, but it's paying off.
Yep.
People really like this movie and I'm glad that people like this movie.
I'm going to pose a question that maybe you can't answer.
I almost certainly can't.
So, on the topic of this movie's success,
yeah,
is Wonder Woman's success due in no small part to the fact that it is a female-led superhero movie directed by a woman? I'm inclined to believe that it is.
Yeah, I think that made them, that gave them such a good press angle that you're going to have a hard time discounting its the importance of that to its success.
Like, people are afraid to speak against...
No, not just...
To dump.
People, dump. I think, like, to a certain extent, yes.
What's that?
I don't know if I would put it in that kind of super stark terms, but there is that element. But it's also,
it's when people praise foreign movies because they're foreign.
That's true.
And I feel,
by the way, I like that being a woman is now a foreign condition. Yeah. although for Hollywood, right? I guess it is. For big budget Hollywood, yeah, it 100% is.
Well, I think there's a certain amount of relativism taking place here.
Going on.
And I think it's important to address.
And it is worth addressing, and I agree it's worth addressing, but let's not lose sight of the fact that it is, just objectively, I feel, leagues better than all of Zack Snyder's superhero movies.
Yeah, no, and as Rob said, we're grading on a curve here.
Yeah. And I think part of it's grading on a curve for that, but the female issue is something that is definitely worth looking at. Mm. Rob?
I was going to say, with the grading on a curve, we're actually there are almost two curves in which to grade it from. I mean, we could go how we have, you know, we could go through and spend, you know, the next 3 hours talking about all the issues that we had with both Suicide Squad and Dawn of Justice. I mean, those are episodes in and of themselves. But we also have the kind of spotty past of Wonder Woman too, is that, you know, it could have ended up being, you know, a Kathy Lee Crosby-esque sort of, or, you know, one of her, the ill-fated David E. Kelly.
TV reimagining, show, yeah.
Right, that almost was. So, you know, there's a lot that the expectations were not high on any level for this. Mm-hmm. So I think that even the slightest bit of entertainment within its way over long 2.5 hours. But you know, even if we got an hour's worth of entertainment, if we had an hour's worth of entertainment, damn, we were walking out of there skipping and whistling, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was,
it's true. I mean, it's true. And honestly, this is the next DC movie after Academy Award winning film, Suicide Squad.
Oh,
so
God.
It couldn't help but
it's like President Donald Trump.
No! It's so sad.
Yeah.
It's like, as they say, like, you know, now they have forever devalued the Oscar by giving one to Suicide Squad.
Wow. Yeah. Well, the Oscar, I think, devalued itself a long time ago, but that's especially egregious. Yeah.
It was bad. All right, so I think that's that. We've got very, very complicated responses to the movie.
Well, at the end of the day, we all liked it.
Yeah, no, we did, and it's definitely worth seeing.
Yes.
Yeah, completely. But still, a complex reaction.
It's a 100%. Worthy diversion. It's a worthy cinematic diversion that is worth seeing on the big screen.
Yeah.
Completely.
And I love
probably not in 3D.
The whole first part of the movie is fucking amazing.
Yeah, it looked great. It was great. That whole sequence was wonderful.
Absolutely.
And yeah, there's a bunch of good stuff in this movie. It's just, you know.
Yeah, nothing is a lot of bad stuff to be seen in 3D because it's only going to make it darker than it already is. And really, you can't go darker than pitch black.
I know. Oh my God. Wow. Hmm. All right. So I guess that's that. Do we have any narcissism we would like to watch?
But do you have to tell me if I do, because are you?
We're posting a video of me playing Friday the 13th and it being narrated by DM and myself, the new Friday the 13th video game. So check that out. It's going to be attached to this episode.
Oh, I thought I was
pretty cool.
Okay. I was also specifically mentioning Elite Sniper. I don't
know. Oh, yes, of course. Right. Yes. also, DM just put together an amazing music video based on the game Sniper Elite 4 and a song by Imagine Dragons. That is, she's done a lot of really solid music videos, and I think this is her best one. She might debate that point, but I'm pretty sure this is her best
it's
one.
Pretty it's pretty good.
It's fantastic. But if you were faint of stomach, it's entirely consists of people getting shot in the head with rifles.
Right on.
That is 100% of the content, so... Just FYI, I don't know how squeamish you are. And third thing, we are working on a brand new project, we're going to be able to talk about probably next week.
What, really?
Let's just say...
That's ambitious.
No, it's not that ambitious, because it's surprisingly easy to make.
So it's...
Oh, okay, yeah. Then. But I'll give you a teaser, and I'm not going to tell you anything about the thing we're making, but let's just say... The AVOD, via the Hogaru outlet, is working on its first video.
Really?
Yes.
Really? And we're not going to tell you what kind of video game it is, but if you know a lot about video games, you'll be like, oh, hey, what video kind of video game could two people make entirely on their own?
Right.
And it's that, it's that type of video game.
No experience doing anything like this.
Who really don't know what they're doing, could make on their own, and... yeah, it's that kind, and maybe you know what that means, maybe you don't know what that means. I can't say. All right, so that's that. I think that's that. No, oh, Vargelon.com for your other needs.
For sure.
Rob, oh, you're right. Rob has some narcissism to watch this week, doesn't he?
Yes, I do, actually. So I have a little side venture project that... that is called Revival House, and it's a monthly film event that we have here in Delaware. And this month we have one, but I think it'll probably be too closer to when this hits. So we have one coming up June 15th, but the one I'm really excited about is in July. So Thursday, July 20th, we are going to show, we have an ongoing series called Pain Don't Hurt, from the immortal words of that fabulously mulleted Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse. And what we call that is they are accidentally awesome movies. So, you know, we've shown Flash Gordon in the past, and this screening, we are showing Jaws 3D in the original 3D anaglyphic.
That's amazing.
Oh, wow. So you've got enough glasses for everybody, I hope?
And I was able to find them at a very cheap price on Amazon. And what's even cooler about this is we also have John Putch, who plays the young Sean Brody, Dennis Quaid's younger brother in the movie, is going to join us via Skype to do a Q&A after it about making this movie and hanging out with Louis Gossett Jr. and so I am really excited to watch this again, and I just recently watched it just to kind of refresh myself on it, because it's been since it was on, you know, the early days. It came out when Friday the 13th was on HBO, and this was on HBO all the time, and we watched it, you know, ad infinitum when it was on then. And I will say that, yes, it is. It's a bad movie, but it is not without merit. If you go back and watch that movie, I think if you separated it from Spielberg's masterpiece, which will always be, and just took it as a Shark Attack movie, it is gloriously fun and entertaining. And it's always engaging, and it's always busy, and there's always something going on. And even the as bad as the 3D special effects are today, and seeing it in this horrendous green screen, one of the first green screens, by the way, it's still an engaging movie that will keep you fully satisfied for its hour and a half running time.
Oh my god.
Sense, it's weirdly that just like I said about that Friday the 13th script, if it were its own thing,
yes,
you would love it more than if you have to compare it to Jaws.
Absolutely. If it did not have that Spielberg, you know, DNA in it with its title, and
people would remember it much more fondly.
I do believe so. I think, and I would kind of give a full-throated defense on it, even down to its female character or female lead, Bess Armstrong, who was never she wasn't like the female warrior, and she was just a very good person with good intent and smart and engaging. I did like the movie, believe it or not, on its own terms, its own merit, even though I can fully accept it as a truly bad kind of jokingly you know, fun movie to watch.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. So I'm excited.
All right,
about
there we go.
In July.
Sounds awesome.
All right. That really does sound awesome.
Yes.
All right. So let's see. I think that's that. So wait, no. You have email to give out? DM?
I thought you were going to be a little bit more artful with your...
Yeah, honestly, I'm wrapping up. We did a bonus length episode, and I wasn't expecting it to be a bonus length episode, so I've lost the ability to think.
All right, you can visit the Avod at theavod.com. You can leave us a comment there. Let us know what you thought about Wonder Woman. Send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
All right, and I encourage you to do all of those things. So until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
And I've been apologizing for being an American.
Oh, as well you should. Thanks for watching, and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.
Bye.